In labor?
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Please don't say that.
All the time, because our friend runs a
we lost Tyler.
Provide advice to the service, and we're not on.
Two, four, six. We got six.
We got six.
Oh, we don't have. No, we don't have an administrator.
Right. You can.
Still trying to get some more.
On $150.
Okay, we ready?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Call the House Committee on Healthcare to order for penultimate day in February for this year. And intention for those of you that are watching what's going on is we intend to go right down the agenda today. One more thing first. We will be carrying over House Bill 2724. We'll be carrying that over until Friday. We'll take it up on Friday. Open a work session on House Bill 2678.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Did you mean 2714?
No, I meant 2724.
It's on page two.
Backside?
Yeah.
Got it.
Sometimes I get it wrong. This one I think I got right.
You got it.
That was just the backside of the page.
Okay.
You had a bunch on here today.
Good. Yeah. We have work to do today. I have opened a work session on House Bill 2678. Mr. Administrator, will you tell us what that's about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2678 authorizes licensed to practice physical therapy in another jurisdiction to provide physical therapy services to individuals in this state to whom the person provided physical therapy services prior to providing services in this state.
That's the bill, if you remember, to allow athletes to bring their PTs with them for their own services. Do we have a motion on this, Mr. Bench?
We do, Mr. Chair. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2678, dated 2/22/13.
Representative Thompson moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill Dash 1 amendments dated 2/22/13 to House Bill 2678. That's a technical amendment, is that right? Is there any discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection? Dash 1 amendment is in now for House Bill 2678. Another motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2678 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 2678 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Klim?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Kimmer?
Aye.
Representative Wiley?
Aye.
Representative Whitener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Greenberg?
Aye. Motion passes. We'll let Representative Hoyle carry this on the floor. Close the work session on House Bill 2678. Open a work session on House Bill 2684. Tell us what this bill is about, Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2684 changes the circumstances under which licensed physical therapists must refer a person to medical doctor, osteopathic physician, chiropractic physician, podiatric physician, and surgeon, naturopathic physician, dentist, physician, assistant, or nurse practitioner.
Mr. Vice Chair, do you have a motion?
I do now. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2684 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion on House Bill 2684? You'll remember this relates to folks who come to physical therapists directly rather than by referral, and it does not put a time limit by which they have to refer them to a physician.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I might, real quick, I'm just wondering, it's one of the things we're noticing just through PEB and some of our own insurance programs. Under Obamacare, we're starting to get to where we have to be referred to some of these different practitioners, and I'm wondering what effect that's going to have on the federal law that's coming through, if this is going to affect that whatsoever.
Well, actually, next week we're going to have a presentation relating the ACA to our general insurance market. You'll be able to ask those very specific questions. We're going to be looking at the effect on our market by the ACA. I think that's going to be Wednesday of next week. We'll have a chance to talk about that. Is there any other discussion on House Bill 2684? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Klim?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Harper?
Yes.
Representative Fenimer?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Whitener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kinney-Geyer?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Greenman?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 2684 is adopted and sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Somebody like to carry that?
I'll take it if you like. If you want.
Right. Representative Harker will be carrying it. Let me I'll close the work session on House Bill 2684, and let me modify what I said. Let's go down to open a work session on House Bill 2124. Mr. Chair, will you tell us what this is about? Mr. Administrator, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2124 eliminates from the Impaired Health Professional Program the requirement that employers program participants establish minimum training requirements for supervision of participants. It removes the admittance to hospital for mental illness and court ruling of mental incompetence from the list of information that the program must report to the licensee's board as evidence of substantial noncompliance.
And we have a dash one on that, is that right? What does the dash one do?
The dash one amendment clarifies the role of the board in assessing the ability of the direct supervisor to supervise the licensee.
We have no opposition to this? Is that anybody here? Okay. Let's have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 2124 dated 2/2013.
Representative Thompson moves to adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 2124 dated 2/2013. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Dash ones are part of 2124. We have another.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2124 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 2124 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative
Clem?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Harper?
Aye.
Representative Kenner?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Whitener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kinney-Geyer?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Greenman?
Aye. House Bill 2124. Motion passes. House Bill 2124 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I have a volunteer to carry it.
Want me to do it?
Who's me? Yes, Representative Kinnemer will be carrying it. That's who the me is. Close the work session on House Bill 2124. Open a work session on House Bill 2130. We've had a little confusion on the amendments on this one, but I think we have it right. Is that right? We have. Why don't you tell us about the bill and tell us about the amendments.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2130 defines substantial noncompliance to include criminal behavior, conduct that causes harm to the public or patient, impairment to in a health care setting in the course of employment, positive drug tests, civil commitment for mental illness, failure to participate in the program after entering into agreement, and failure to enroll after being referred. It allows regulatory boards discretion to require drug testing when the program reports substantial noncompliance for mental health disorder, requires third-party independent audits to occur every 4 years, allows certain boards to contract with other programs to deliver therapeutic services to its licensees, and declares an emergency effective on its passage. The dash two amendments add sexual impropriety with the patient to the definition of substantial noncompliance and removes lack of capacity to stand trial from the definition of substantial noncompliance. The dash three amendment clarifies the role of the board in assessing the ability of the direct supervisor to supervise a licensee.
And we do not need the dash ones now, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2130 dated 2-2013 and the dash three amendments dated 2-2013.
Representative Thompson moves the that we amend House Bill 2130 with the dash twos dated 2-2013 and the dash threes also dated 2-2013. Is there any discussion?
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
In the dash twos, the we're adding language including sexual impropriety with a patient, not to be a caricature of an attorney, but do we know what exactly that means? What would be included within the definition of sexual impropriety?
Well, I'll tell you what, we have an expert out there who's dealt with these for a long time. Holly, will you come and make a comment on that? Can you tell us how you deal with sexual impropriety? And
the not how definition. Deal,
what's
Chair,
the
what,
definition?
What it means.
Well, I think there's by... I believe there is by practice a definition,
statutory,
because a lot of the boards deal with what are known as boundary problems, and perhaps you can tell us about that.
Chair Greenlick.
She didn't know she was going to be called, so she's flying impromptu at this moment.
Yes. Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Kenny Guy, members of the committee, my name is Holly Mercer. I'm currently the interim executive director for the Health Licensing Agency. I was the former executive director for the Board of Nursing and am quite familiar with this program, was involved in the work groups that worked on House Bill 2345 and forward. So anyway, the question, as I understand it, is how the boards deal with sexual impropriety. Definitely, we look at boundary issues, and I think it is in some ways very hard to define to Representative Conger's question, although when we've had the cases, at least before the Board of Nursing, it was quite clear when those boundaries had been violated. So I think that's probably the best I can do with that. My understanding is that this bill then makes it a substantial noncompliance when that boundary is violated, if that's correct.
That's correct.
Yes.
Does that help?
No.
This is the kind of stuff that's good for lawyers' business, right?
It is, exactly. And that's what worries me, believe it or not. And, you know, I think in most cases, obviously, it would be apparent. I was more interested in finding out if there was some more fine lines that have been drawn around, you know, what you call it, a boundary violation?
Yes, that's correct, a boundary.
So you have a term, an industry term that's boundary violation, but in the statute we're using, we're not saying boundary violation. I'm
carried over.
And it's okay. I'm not saying this is necessarily bad. I just was looking for a little bit more understanding of what that meant, since we haven't dealt with this specific issue before.
That's why this is defined somewhere else in statute.
If it is, then we have a statutory definition, and it would be clear. I'm more concerned about it not being clear and someone disputing whether or not it, you know, it's sexual impropriety.
Let's see if we can get a counsel up.
It's a good idea.
I think this was probably, who did these, do you remember?
Is it Mark Mayer? You mean Legislative Council?
Yeah, the Legislative Council.
I believe that Mark did most of that drafting.
All right,
Chair.
We'll find out who did.
Okay.
Let's, let's close the work session.
Thank you.
And move on.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll get back to the work session when we get a council up to talk to us. Can I have a motion to suspend the rules to allow our vice chair to vote on the 2678, 2684, and 2124?
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules and allow Vice Chair Kenny Guyer to vote on the aforementioned bills.
Is there any objection? The rules are suspended, and hold on a minute, we'll get...
I could add some clarification about the sexual impropriety.
Okay, but wait a minute.
Different topic.
Can you record some votes? If can you do that? Is that?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, it's going to be today. Okay, good. He's very interested in that bill, so she's reading that.
No, I just need you to record three votes.
She's from the medical board.
We have January. It's coming.
You can hear this. Representative Kenny Guy, how do you vote on House Bill 2678?
Thank you for the opportunity. Colleagues, I vote aye.
How do you vote on House Bill 2684?
I vote aye.
How do you vote on House Bill 2124?
Aye.
Good. Those votes are recorded, thank I you. Think.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
While we're in this brief lull here, I volunteered to carry House Bill 2684. I then remembered that it is Representative Parrish's bill. Should we check with her first and see if she would like to carry it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. We'll put that on the record. We'll give Representative Parrish the first option. And failing that...
Either way.
You do it. Okay. Let's open up a work session on House Bill 2896. You explain the bill to us, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2896 prohibits an entity doing business in this state as a tanning facility from allowing a person who is under 18 years of age to use a tanning device that is owned or operated by that entity. It allows service to minors if a parent or legal guardian provides documentation from a licensed physician recommending tanning for a medical purpose, and an entity allows the minor to use the tanning device according to the terms of the recommendation.
Do we have a motion on this?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2896 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion on House Bill 2896?
I have just one brief comment, if I may.
Please.
I really struggle a little bit, believe it or not, with this bill. Obviously, I think that the objective, which is to reduce deadly cancer in the future for people who might otherwise start tanning at a young age, especially uninformed or just exercising the bad judgment that we all did when we were teenagers, but suffering a much more severe consequence. I think it's fantastic. Obviously, I'm in favor of that. I was concerned in some respects because this is frankly paternalistic on the part of the state, and an informed parent, as was testified, should be able to make these decisions. However, I think that concern was overridden by the fact that I'm not sure most parents are informed about the danger, particularly about the severity of the danger that we were hearing about. And then, really, I was torn over the last bit of testimony we heard opposing the bill, which I thought was had raised some very good questions about the validity. However, the credibility of the testimony, I think, was insufficient. But I raised those concerns because I would hope that at some point the causal connection could truly be established, to give us some comfort that we're taking the right vote here. And I'm sort of assuming everyone's going to vote for it. I am going to vote for it. Ultimately, in balance, I think that's the right decision.
Representative Harkin, you had a chance to review some other documentation on this. Did you have a chance to...
Yes, Mr. Chair, I did receive and review, not a full in-depth review of everything that I was sent, but I did receive additional documentation backing up the statistical claims from those on in support of the bill. I did not receive anything from the other side as I had requested of the industry's representative. I don't know if the committee has received that. And we did? Okay, I have not seen that one, and I cannot comment on it. But what I have seen from the other side is very solid evidence.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Widener.
Fortunately, Widener, whatever flavor I am here today.
Yesterday we heard a little.
I was unable to be here Monday to hear some of the testimony and everything on this, but it's a bill that normally on the surface I would look at and probably not get behind. But, to me this is similar to smoking. And sometimes when we're kids, we don't know what we're doing to ourselves, and we're letting our own vainness or trying to be cool or things like that get in the way of decisions that we make. And with it being people under the age of 18, that's what makes me supportive of this bill, because we're looking out for kids from getting skin cancer. So that way when they turn 18, they're thinking about it. Hey, maybe I shouldn't be
still
doing this all the time.
Still a little young yet, but...
Yeah. About 24 is when dad starts becoming smart again. But it's one of those bills that I think we're actually looking out for the best of society, because right now kids can walk in and probably have a forged note and give it to them and get in the tanning beds, because I know kids that have abused this in my own community. So I will be supporting this bill today.
Mr. Chair, I would like to put on the record that I think we may want to, in January, come back and revisit this subject. I was a little disturbed to find, I met with a group of high school students that are part of a youth group I work with, but in discussion with them, I was a little surprised to find that a number of them had been involved in underage tanning. And the testimony that we had here yesterday or the other day was accurate, that teenagers running at least one of these tanning facilities do let their friends in to tan for free. And in this particular group, in a number of cases. So I'm suggesting we may want to take a closer look at this on what is the regulatory climate assuming that the testimony about the danger was correct. What is the regulatory climate on these? And maybe we need a different training and inspection mode for the operation. I was also concerned to see that these units are, in fact, being resold on the internet for as little as $150, units that are traded out of tanning facilities and sold to the general public. In which case they're ending up in somebody's home with no regulation, the timer doesn't necessarily have to be utilized, the duration or frequency is, they don't even have the 8.5 by 11 brochure that tells them what they're supposed to do. And this may be something we want to look at more in depth in terms of, I'm not in favor of over-regulating anything, but this may be a serious problem.
We can ask OHA to come in and talk to us about the this comes under the radiation control, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe after we get done with bills.
I have some severe questions about the training of people. There may be training programs. I'm not sure the people operating these businesses are actually being trained, or the operators on duty at any particular time have actually been trained. And I'd like some answers to some additional questions.
Thank you. Representative Clem?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I mentioned the other day, I was fairly skeptical prior to the hearing. I became less skeptical, mostly as the Tanning Industry Association person talked. That was kept pushing me towards wanting to vote for the bill. I think if I believed that all of the programs that they talked about were being enforced, but I went on the computer and looked up this congressional research report from only a year ago where they did all these blind calls to people's tanning businesses around the country, proposing and said, I'm 15 and I'm a light-skinned female, what would, can I come in? Oh yeah, sure, come on in, it's great. And so I believe that those things were being enforced, I might feel better, but I'm sure it's better than when I grew up, but it was being run by other 16-year-olds when I grew up, and they would just let you in if it was my friend's older sister ran the one in Coos Bay, and they would just let you in, and there was no counseling of any kind. Yeah. I don't remember if we paid or not, for that matter. I just didn't like it, so I went once or twice, and it was not my thing. But I don't know that everybody runs their salons the way the woman who's part of a bigger chain of them that I was familiar with the name of it, they may very well do that, but a lot of people don't do that. So then it assumes that the parent knows what they're doing too. And now that I have a little 5-year-old girl, it's a whole different world for me analyzing all of these issues. But there's lots of times I don't really think it's a state's role to tell people how to keep themselves safe, that not everyone here would agree with, I'm sure, like helmet laws, things like that. But in this particular case, I just have to side with the Brian Druckers of the world and the Bud Pierces and not the guy from Thank You for Smoking that showed up here.
Thank you, Richard. Would you call the roll, please? Oh, I'm sorry, somebody else? Mm. Oh, yes, please call the roll.
Representative Klim?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Harper?
Aye.
Representative Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Whitehair?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Greenland?
Aye. Motion passes. Do we have a volunteer on this?
Johnson.
What do you want to do?
Or I think it's Johnson and somebody's bill, isn't it? They represent Johnson and somebody came in here to testify on it.
Is this Buckley's bill?
Oh, Buckley and Mark Johnson.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Let's let That's them be co-carriers. Buckley and Johnson. Close the work session on House Bill 2896. Reopen a work session on House Bill 2130. I think I saw a council lurking in the back. Is that right? Come on.
Lurkicity.
You can't hide. Please come in and introduce yourself.
He got a haircut. He's trying to go incognito.
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Rep Kenny Geyer, Mark Mayer, Legislative Council. I was asked to testify on the -2 and -3 amendments to...
Well, it's one particular issue. Representative Conger, can you raise the question that you were raising, see if we...
Yes, the...
We're back here, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The -2 amendment... Inserts...
2130? 2130.
The words, including sexual impropriety with a patient, in House Bill 2130. And we hadn't discussed this amendment ahead of time, and I was just curious if there's a statutory amendment or there's some kind of clarity about what exactly a sexual impropriety with a patient would be. For example, I would hope, obviously, it doesn't include the spouse of a physician who happens to treat their spouse.
Right, and in this particular context, because we don't have a definition for it, it would be adjudged as to what does sexual impropriety mean by plain language. So that would be a judicial interpretation of that particular phrase.
So there's no industry standard or anything that we can reference that would be clearer for people.
There could probably be clearer wording if you want to make sure that it doesn't apply in certain situations as you've drawn up. But I would assume that sexual impropriety, and again, assuming here because I don't have enough time to do I haven't done the research on what the plain meaning of that term would mean in this context, but I would assume that sexual impropriety would not include the specific situation that you mentioned. But again, in order to assure that that definition isn't applied or that judicial interpretation is applied, we would have to define it for the particular statute in question.
Ms. Krishnaswamy, would you tell us how the medical board deals with this? Is this?
Yes. Good afternoon, Representative Greenleg, Representative Conger. My name is Nicole Krishnaswamy. I'm from the Oregon Medical Board. This is existing language. The definition of substantial noncompliance is moved from another place that's later in the bill, so it's being deleted from that section and being moved up.
It's not new language.
It's not new language, and there is a definition for sexual impropriety, and I apologize. I cannot recall if it's in rule or in statute, but there is a definition for it, and it's quite explicit in what is included.
It would be in rule for this series.
Would you... We'll move on the bill today. It's okay with you, but it would be useful if you sent that to us so we have it for future reference. And it's not new language in the bill. We're simply moving it from somewhere else. Cleaning things up, as Les Council likes to do.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, guys.
Just pointing out, there's common sense, and then in my experience, there's what happens in a courtroom. And they're different, and that's why I think clarity is better when you're dealing with something that could impact a person's livelihood, and that's the reason for the question. I appreciate you indulging me, and I'm glad that there's a definition.
On the other hand, if you make a list of specific improprieties, the one before you will be a different item, not on the list, so it goes both ways.
Full employment for attorneys.
That's right.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Is there any other discussion on House Bill 2130? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Flynn?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Did we adopt the amendments?
We did adopt the...
Adopted
twos and the threes.
Then I'm an aye.
You have an aye vote.
Okay. Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Greenleg?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 2130, as amended with the dash twos and threes, moves to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Volunteer for a carrier? Thompson, you want to try this one?
Sounds like my kind of bill.
Representative Thompson will be carrying the bill. Close the work session on House Bill 2130. Open a work session on House Bill 2612. Would you describe the bill to us, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2612 provides that postpartum mother and certain persons may remove the placenta from healthcare facilities, and the Dash 1 amendments grants rulemaking authority to the Oregon Health Authority and removes the criteria for the removal of placenta.
Whose bill was that? Your bill. Okay. We have a motion on the amendment.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 2/19/13 on House Bill 2612.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2612 dated 2/19/13. You want to tell us what the amendment does?
Yeah, the amendment, basically this law allows hospitals to give women who have given birth the placenta to take home. In fact, many hospitals are already doing that, and some have come up with their own waivers about if you take this placenta, it will not be available for pathological reports, or if you choose to allow it here to go through pathological report, it's covered with a formaldehyde, and then you can't take it home. So there is some patient education that's going on, and in fact, hospitals are not aware that they've been doing this technically against the law. So this allows hospitals to disperse placentas. And we decided to take out some of the sideboards in the bill and leave it to the rulemaking in Oregon Health Authority about who is eligible to take it home, under what conditions, whatever sideboards should be there. We thought the appropriate place, because those might change over time, is at Oregon Health Authority.
And that's the Dash 1 amendment.
That's the Dash 1. So basically it makes the bill just, we make it legal, we leave it up to Oregon Health Authority to develop the rules.
Is there any discussion on the Dash 1 amendments? Any objection to the Dash 1 amendments? Dash 1s are part of House Bill 2612. We have a motion on the amended bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2612 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves House Bill 2612 to the floor as amended with the dash ones with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Flynn?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative
Parker?
Aye.
Representative
Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative
Weidner? Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2612 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended with the dash ones. Will you be carrying it?
Unless any of my male colleagues here would like to.
Come on, don't say that.
I see the two in the end, very red, so I want to give you the opportunity.
It was the thing about guys claiming parentage of the
president. I'm happy to. Happy to handle it.
Representative Kitty Geyer will be carried to the floor. Close the work session on House Bill 2612 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2768. Can you tell us what that does?
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2768 modifies definitions and licensure requirements for professions regulated by the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists.
Okay. Can I call to the Tobias, Stephen Rogers, and Larry Connor? Who proposed this bill? Go for it.
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, my name is Larry Connor. I'm speaking to you today as the president of COPACT, the Coalition of Oregon Professional Associations for Counseling and Therapy, which represents licensed professional counselors, LPCs, and licensed marriage and family therapists, LMFTs, across Oregon. We are here today to testify in support of House Bill 2768, which we have brought forward to modify our licensing statute. Both of these professions have been licensed to practice under Oregon statute since 1991. Licensed professional counselors and licensed marriage and family therapists are highly trained master's level mental health providers who offer psychotherapy and other counseling services to individuals of all ages, families, couples, groups, and organizations throughout Oregon. There are 3,500 LPCs, LMFTs, and registered interns. We estimate that each week, those LPCs, LMFTs, and registered interns work with over 70,000 Oregonians seeking services in mental health clinics, private practices, hospitals, prisons, educational institutions, and rehabilitation agencies. House Bill 2768 does two things. First, it makes the definitions of professional counseling and marriage and family therapy clearer and more enforceable by our licensure board. And second, it makes the time required for internship prior to licensure the same for LPCs and LMFTs. I will address the definition issues, and my colleague Steve Rogers will explain the internship issue.
Can I also ask, do we have a representative of the board here today?
We do.
Vicki. Could we ask you to join us?
There is a chair.
Thank you. Go ahead.
In 2009, the law governing our professions was revised substantially and is now a practice act. However, as the law has been implemented since then, it has become clear that some of the definitions need revision to ensure clarity for both practitioners and for our licensing board. In Section 1, Number 2, we propose adding a definition of clinical experience to help clarify the term, which appears in statute but has not been defined. In Section 1, Numbers 6A and 7A, we update and simplify the definitions of marriage and family therapy and professional counseling. With the addition of this language, practitioners will have clearer and easier to understand definitions, and the board will be better able to enforce the Practice Act element for LPCs and LMFTs. House Bill 2768 applies only to master's level professional counselors and marriage and family therapists who provide diagnosis and treatment of mental disorders. It does not apply to anyone without a master's degree in counseling or marriage and family therapy or to anyone who does not diagnose or treat mental disorders. COPACT has consulted with the executive director, Becky Eklund, of the board, Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists on the language proposed in this bill, and it is our understanding that they have no concerns. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2768. I ask your support for the bill and hope you will send it to the House floor. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have whenever you deem necessary.
Chair Greenlink and members of the committee, my name is Stephen Rogers, and I'm testifying on behalf of COPACT, of which I'm the treasurer and on the board. The Oregon Association of Marriage and Family Therapists, the Oregon Association of Counselors, and COPACT, the Coalition of Oregon Professional Associations of Counselors and Therapists, all support House Bill 2768. As my colleague testified about some changes in the Practice Act in 2768, all address modifications as to training requirements and licensure. The number of years it takes to become an LPC and an LMFT differ post-graduation. While LPCs and LMFTs require the same amount of graduate school, postgraduate LPCs can attain their licensure after 2 years, and LMFTs currently take 3 years. So this bill and the changes we are suggesting will bring those into parity and equality so that both would take 3 years, the final year of graduate school being one of those 3 years. It seeks to recognize the similarity between the two professions in education and training standards. Does not warrant treating the two licensure timelines as distinct or different. Therefore, we believe it's an important part of streamlining and strengthening the Practice Act of 2009. And I encourage the committee's support of 2768, and thank you for this opportunity to testify. I would be happy to answer any of your questions.
Let me ask the board, do you have a problem with any of this stuff?
Chair Greenlink, Becky Eklund, the Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. The association worked very closely with our office to develop the language. We have no concerns about it whatsoever.
Thank you. Yes.
Just out of curiosity, what brought this up for you to bring the legislation forward or want to make the change? Was there something that was going on in the industry that prompted this? Any specifics you could give us to help us out here?
Chair Greenlink, Representative Widener. After we wrote the language of the Practice Act, what is now current statute, we discovered from the attorney from the Department of Justice who enforces it that the language of both definitions was not legally particularly helpful. In fact, it was fairly unenforceable, partially because we linked a number of clauses with the word and we were told that we needed to change that as soon as we could. Secondly, the imbalance in terms of the licensure or the internship length for LPCs and LMFTs was a long-standing issue that needed to be resolved. So we chose to do both of those at the same time.
I'd like to ask a question. Do you have a copy of the bill with you?
I do.
What's now become 6A, it was originally 5A, on page 1, line 17 through 22, which is, I think, the core of what we're talking about here. In the old language, it talks specifically about treatment within the context of marriage and family systems. This now makes it very generic and talks about, it strikes me as the definition could now take any psychoanalyst, psychiatrist, psychologist. I mean, it simply talks about the applying of family systems or other psychotherapeutic principles and methods in delivery of service to individuals, couples. I mean, I think that's what Representative Kenmer used to do.
Yep.
So how does this uniquely, I mean, it seems to me if you want to practice definition, it should include all of you and none of anybody else, right? This includes all of you and all of everybody else, I think.
Representative, or Chair Greenlink.
Talk to me about that.
That is always a question that, as I'm sure Representative Kenmer understands, in the world of psychotherapy, we do crossover. We train together. We all study family systems together. Marriage and family therapists study more of it than we do. We study the same theories. We go to the same trainings. So there is a crossing over. In response to that particular question that you're asking about that particular section of the bill, there has been some confusion because of that particular clause in marriage and family therapists about, do I have to do only family therapy? And if you look at the way the current statute is written, it says that they work within the context of family systems to individuals, couples, families, and so forth and so on.
Wait a minute. It doesn't say what you just said.
In the current statute.
Within the context of family. Oh, in the current statute.
Right. In the current
within
statute.
Within the context of family. Yeah.
And therefore, marriage and family therapists have expressed confusion to our associations about what is the limit on what I do. And in fact, all of us do individual counseling at times. All of us do couples counseling at times, and so forth and so on, family counseling at times. So what we try to do, instead of saying within the context of family systems, that they apply family systems theory and other psychotherapeutic
principles. No, it's not and, it's or.
Or, yeah. Right, yes, yes.
You didn't do and, which means you don't have to do family systems theory.
That is correct.
You can do any psychotherapeutic principles.
That is correct, because we are trained eclectically. All LPCs and LFTs are trained in the same universities, the same graduate programs, starting out with the same multiple theories and approaches to therapy, and then the LMFTs take more family systems theory. Am I confusing you further?
You're not confusing me at all, but it seems to me if here's a definition of profession A, and here's a definition of profession B, and they're both the same, you don't have two professions, you have one profession. So the question is, why not abolish this board and have you all report, or merge two boards and have you all report to the same board if you have the same definition?
Representative Greenlick, that's a fascinating idea that I think would be a great discussion at another time. but that wouldn't address the problem that we're trying to address right today.
I think we shall have that discussion.
I suspect you are correct.
Is there any other discussion? Is anybody in opposition to this? Have you heard any? You haven't heard any opposition, have you?
Chair Greenlick, yeah. Becky Eklund, I'm not aware of any opposition to it.
How about you guys?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
if
I
yes.
can just comment.
Please.
I found your line of questioning interesting. And it is interesting. When I applied for licensure as a psychologist in 75, only a psychiatrist and psychologist could use psychotherapy, and other professionals in the mental health field were not allowed to use those words. The problem, I think it was well described, is the training has come to be, just lost my word, but intermixed, and so we're trained together often, and these words have become interchangeable, whereas used to they were signs of specific professions. However, there still are differences in the extent of the training and the experiential experience, and so those change, and it's similar. We see that with some of the nurse practitioners or the physician's assistants are probably analogies in and
social workers
to all fit into this broad category that is getting more amorphous, if I may. And
I just assumed it was a devaluation of the currency.
You know, it was intriguing to me. I asked that question among some of the professional groups, and everybody seems to have decided to get on board and be happy with it. So.
Well,
Mr. Chair, before you, are you going to close?
I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session.
I am fine with that if I can make a comment before
please,
we vote.
No, please do. I mean, I want to make sure everybody's feeling okay about that. I haven't had a chance to check with folks.
I thought actually that your question, your focus on the language there was excellent. I mean, the definition of marriage and family therapy, I mean, we're amending that definition to eliminate marriage and I think therapy as well, which I don't have an opinion about, but I think the question is a very good one. I understand that goes to the profession and, as you said, sort of the amorphousness of specialization or the specialized licensing. I think it's a great question whether or not there needs to be that distinction. In the legal practice, there are attorneys, and then they specialize in practice, but they're just attorneys, and there are a few specialized attorneys who obtain an additional educational requirement, like there are in other professions, that, and then they can attach that designation to their broader licensing. And it doesn't actually change their license, it just changes their it changes their certification, doesn't it change the fact that they're a member of the bar. And that, it strikes me that that may be something that's evolving in your profession as well. I also want to say just quickly that I feel truly vindicated, because while I know some of you had to be rolling your eyes while I was asking that definitional question about sexual impropriety, we have now come full circle, and we have a bill in front of us that is adding a definition of clinical experience. We question the definition of marriage and family therapy. If there would have been someone who was as nitpicky as me when this statute was first written, we wouldn't need Section 2, Paragraph 2 of this bill.
I want to put on the record that my eyes were not being ruled. Okay, can I have a motion on this bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2768 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill... Where am I?
2768.
2768 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? How about this? How about you didn't expect this quick action?
Like this.
This is our first bill that we...
I just loiter outside the door.
Yeah. Could you please call the roll?
Representative
Clement? Aye. Representative Conger? Aye. Representative Parker? Aye. Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Kinnemer? Aye. Representative Weidner? Aye. Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair
Greenlee? Aye. Motion passes House Bill 2768 goes to the floor. Can I ask you, is this essentially a tech, I mean just a cleanup bill? Is there anything substantive in it? I think you're putting it on the consent calendar, but I don't want to do that if there's any.
I don't think we should probably do that with it.
Okay. Well,
carry it if you need someone to. But
you carry it? Okay. Representative Weidner will carry it. No, it's we could have gotten some. Good. That's good. Close the work session on House Bill 2768 and open a work session on House Bill 2714. Will you tell us what this bill is about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2714 authorizes a pharmacy to perform certain tests and examinations if the pharmacy obtains a waiver from the United States Department of Health and Human Services and complies with the applicable federal regulations.
Okay, maybe somebody can explain this thing to us. We have Sean Miller, Mark Watt, and Linda Howery, and then we'll get Betsy Earls after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Sean Miller, I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Community Pharmacy Council, which is a chain pharmacy interest in the state of Oregon, in support of House Bill 2714. And this is an important bill that integrates pharmacies, pharmacists, in a more preventative role and providing more access to address chronic diseases such as heart disease, diabetes, hypertension, which are some of the most common, costly, and preventable of all the health problems in the United States. The bill is simple. It allows pharmacies and pharmacists to obtain a waiver with the federal government, which we call a CLIA waiver, and I'll explain that, to perform these CLIA-waived tests. And currently, these particular tests are regulated by the CMS under the Clinical Laboratories Improvement Amendment. And as you can see on House Bill 2714, on lines 7 and 8 of the bill, it references the CFRs, which actually govern or at least regulate these particular tests. And I won't go through all of the CFRs, but the main component to qualify for to perform these wave tests are that it must be cleared by the FDA for home use, and it has to employ methodologies that are so simple and accurate as to render the likelihood of erroneous results negligible and pose no reasonable risk to harm to the patient. These are tests such as blood glucose, AIC for diabetes, cholesterol and lipid panels, and body composition tests. And so this particular bill we believe complements the health care reforms that this committee has been working on to provide more access and integrate more of providers in more preventative roles. And so, again, and the bill also, since the federal government has deemed these tests safe, pharmacists are trained to do these tests, and most states actually, are, pharmacies are allowed to do these tests now. So this particular bill would align state law, authorize that with the federal law, and that's really all it does is align the two, state and federal. So with me today, I have Mark Watt with Walgreens and Linda Howery from Bi-Mart to discuss it further. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Greenlick and members of the committee, my name is Marcus Watt, and I'm here today representing Walgreens in support of House Bill 2714. Chronic diseases such as diabetes, hypertension, and heart disease are among the most common and preventable of all health problems in the United States. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, chronic diseases afflict 141 million Americans and cause 70% of all deaths. They are also a major driver of the nation's health care spending, accounting for approximately 75% of all such spending. Certain chronic diseases may not exhibit symptoms, and when left untreated can lead to significant increases in preventable death, disability, and health care costs. Health tests are methods of detecting diseases in people who may not know and may not yet exhibit any signs or symptoms of the disease being tested for. These health tests can identify problems before they start and be used to monitor and maintain a person's health status. Some of the common health tests provided by community pharmacists in other states include blood glucose, hemoglobin A1C, cholesterol and lipid panels, and body composition testing. In addition to testing, community pharmacists may also provide consultation to the patient as to the results and follow up with a patient's primary care provider to refer them for further care. Now, both state and federal laws regulate clinical laboratory tests. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services regulates laboratories under the Clinical Laboratory Improvements Amendment. CLIA-waived lab tests are defined as simple laboratory examinations and procedures that are cleared by the Food and Drug Administration for home use. They employ methodologies that are so simple and accurate as to render the likelihood of erroneous results negligible or to pose no reasonable risk of harm to the patient if the test is performed incorrectly. Federal law subjects facilities performing only CLIA-waived tests to a lesser level of regulation than does Oregon. Passage of House Bill 2714 would align Oregon laws and regulations with the federal laws. And today, 37 states follow federal CLIA waiver requirements. Oregon would be the 38th if we are to pass this bill. In other Walgreens locations where it's allowed, our experience has been that 40% of the individuals tested had a result outside of established guidelines. Our program is educational in nature. It encourages patients to seek appropriate follow-up care with their physician or healthcare provider. Enactment of this legislation will result in greater access to safe, simple, and economical tests that will play a crucial role in the identification and prevention of health disease for patients with complex and chronic conditions. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for hearing my testimony on House Bill 2714, and I'd like to ask for your support.
Linda?
I'm Linda Howery. I'm a regional manager with Bi-Mart. Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, I'm here representing Oregon State Pharmacists Association and the Oregon Society of Health Care Pharmacists. As a community pharmacist, what this would allow us to do is we see patients every 30 to 90 days. It would allow us to do these tests for them or enable them to understand what their diseases are and to better manage those diseases when they fall out of guidelines. It gives us a quicker, better way to get them referred to a physician so that we can get that under control. I think these tests, if this bill passes, it would really help the CCO model and go in the direction that we're hoping that the healthcare will go in Oregon. Thank you.
Want to comment on that, Representative Thompson?
Yeah, I like this bill because it spreads the base for chronic disease state management, which we've needed for a long time. And I think it helps define a little better a healthcare team. But I have one question, and I think it comes from being in this bill that I associate with attorneys, or I wouldn't even think about it. but it says a pharmacy may perform the test, et cetera, et cetera. And the other part, I'm questioning the precision of that language. Do we want the word pharmacy there or pharmacist?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, I believe it's the pharmacy that actually has to apply with the CFRs to get the approval. Now, the pharmacist has to administer it. So, again, a licensed pharmacist would be the one administering the test. Okay. But under the CFRs, when you look at them, it talks about the notification requirements, the application.
Okay. That's all I need to know. I'm just concerned that if I go to the pharmacy at 2 in the morning, there's no one there, but it says the pharmacy can be doing it.
Yeah.
Okay, I kept that.
Yeah.
Help me understand this. Let's talk about a lipid panel. How would a pharmacy perform a lipid panel?
These tests utilize needle stick, so they're very small amounts of blood. They don't require a draw, so the pharmacist...
Lipid panel doesn't require a draw?
No.
It's a finger stick that's slightly more than what you would do with a blood glucose machine.
And that's a full lipid panel you're talking about?
Yes. And they have been approved for home use.
They use a dagger on you for a different reason.
Okay, so I come in. There's a clerk there, and a clerk pricks my finger, and then...
No, that would be the pharmacist.
Where does it say that? Is that under the federal...
Yeah, the federal.
...restrictions?
But I was just asking to clarify.
Well, I mean, I understand that the pharmacy needs to do it, but could there be a lab tech there to do it? Phlebotomist? I mean,
no, it's a very simple needle stick. Our program, the pharmacists are the ones that administer it. So the pharmacist would do the needle stick. They would take the sample, put it in the machine. When the results were read, they would interpret it and then communicate back with the patient.
How about a pharmacy tech?
That's not what we do. I can't speak to...
What about the law is the question.
It would seem to me that that would not be part of what a technician can do under the board.
I think that's correct.
That would not be part of their practice. It would have to be a licensed pharmacist.
Mr. Chair, that's my understanding, too, and I'm happy to look into that further, but please. We understand that it has to be a pharmacist because they are the ones that with their license to perform these tests and no other in the pharmacy.
Well, I'm not sure pharmacists are really trained to do this, but that's a different question.
Yeah.
They do train them, and, they are trained at pharmacy school to do this. We go through extensive training. If we were to bring these in to the pharmacy, I know I went through quite a bit of training to be able to run the machines that were before the ones that were approved for OTC. They're CLIA waived. You can have somebody, you could go in and buy one and do one.
So it didn't need to be a pharmacist then to do it?
You could test yourself.
You could test yourself. But having
I can't test you.
But having us be able to test, like if you have a patient that maybe has struggles getting the testing done, or maybe when they come into us and we're doing medication therapy management, it's just one more tool to see whether or not the meds they're on are working the way we want. If they fall out of that guidelines, it gives us a way to get them into their primary care, or it enables us to educate the patients and to find out maybe they're not taking their medications correctly.
Do they need to be fasting for that test?
Only for the full lipid panel.
That's the one I was talking
about. Yeah, so cholesterol, the HDLs, no.
But the full lipid panel?
It's only the triglycerides that you would have to think about the fast for.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Sure.
Thank you very much, panelists.
Yeah, this has some real possibility because as we diversify the way we're doing medical care and get people to move to the top of their licenses, part of that is getting more people involved in some of these things that are relatively simplistic. And again, to reiterate, I mean, the tests involved here are the ones that people could do at home, although most people don't want to. And it's part of the ongoing story. And to extend it out farther, there's at least one state now that licenses pharmacists to do phlebotomy, which is a whole lot more than the needle stick. So the way in which healthcare is diversifying is interesting in the light of what we're trying to do here in Oregon. But this doesn't put Oregon on the forefront. It helps us catch up.
I'd like to know what the reliability and validity of these measures are compared to. It seems to me Olympic Dental has some, well, some of these others have some significant therapeutic issues.
I think what it does is, for instance, if we're doing a complete medical workup, a drug workup on a patient, in an ambulatory setting, we don't have access to lipids, we don't have access to the cholesterol, blood glucose. By allowing us to do these tests, that gives us some guidelines that when we're doing a complete workup on their medication, it enables us to define.
What do you mean doing a complete workup on the medication?
You look at a patient med list, you talk to the patient, make sure they understand how they're taking it, they're not taking too much, they're not taking too little, they understand what it's for, how they're taking it, side effects, how to manage those side effects.
Why don't you do a physical? That's what it takes. I mean, if what you're saying is in order to do a proper drug, why not do a physical exam?
I'd go for that if you'll allow it.
Why not break down the difference between pharmacists and physicians? In the same question we just had in the last.
I think the differentiation is we're talking specifically about their medications, not about, we're talking just how the medications affect the disease state and managing that. Mm. We're not diagnosing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
The other thing that and I know I bring
this
up all the time.
While the next panel is coming up.
But in a lot of cases, we're dealing with rural situations. Mm-hmm. We can be doing some of this stuff in the same way we do telemedicine, where we have results on some of these tests that allow a pharmacist to monitor the progress of a patient, not to do the diagnosis or workup, but once they're already on medications, a remote pharmacist can do these tests and say, yeah, this is working, or it's not working, and refer back to the physician without the physician or without the patient have to drive 90 miles to do it.
We have to drive 50 miles to get to the pharmacy.
Well, that could be too, yeah. But it's an access issue that
definitely is.
Helps out with some of the direction we're trying to move.
Yeah. Ms. Earls.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Representative Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Betsy Earls, representing
you.
Associated Oregon Industries.
All the time.
In support of House Bill 2714. AOI has about 1,900 members across the state, and most of those provide some level of health insurance for their employees. In the interest of wellness and health promotion, affordability of care, we urge your support of House Bill 2714. The bill increases access to routine tests for people who are dealing with health conditions that would benefit from ongoing assessment. And although these tests are available for use at home, I know some of our members' employees would benefit from the assistance or maybe just the moral support of a health professional in performing them. And being able to get this help in an easily accessible and familiar environment, such as their neighborhood pharmacy, is likely to encourage patients toward proactive and preventative management of their health condition. So this, in turn, of course, leads to improved wellness and correspondingly lower costs of care. And as employers are attempting to control their health care costs to be able to continue to provide insurance to their employees, AOI very much supports bills such as 2714, which helps them do both those things.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Ms. Earls?
If I'd known what she was going to say, I wouldn't have said anything. I'm sorry.
So you should have just waited.
Yeah.
I have a question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And I don't know if this is better actually for you or the previous panel, but as you were talking, I was thinking about it. Is there, what would the cost of this be? Would insurance provide it? Are there any sideboards that should be on it on how often it's done? Are pharmacists going to be able to do these blood monitoring whenever they feel it's necessary? Is there any check and balance to that? So as you're talking about the healthcare cost, it made me think about those questions.
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair, Representative Kenny Geyer, I think that we're working above my pay grade at this point.
Yeah. I realize as you were talking about cost issues, it's probably the previous panel that would be best.
Thank you.
Answer. Thank you.
Ms.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller again with the Oregon Community Pharmacy Council. Mr. Chair, Representative Kenny Geyer. I think to address the cost issue, these are very affordable tests, and so
actually charges we're talking about, not costs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're right. So what a pharmacy would charge for a test, and I do have some examples of normally body compositions $15. And this is just one pharmacy, but again, you can see the competitive nature. Body composition, blood glucose 20, cholesterol 30, full lipid 35, and A1C test 35. These are just examples from one large chain nationally that does these in 37 other states. And so, you know, if you could see if you're going to have, you know, if, again, on an ongoing basis, and I don't like to compare prices to other providers, but this is an affordable or very affordable price to be able to get these tests done. And as for restrictions around doing the tests, you know, again, if it's something that you're going to get on a regular schedule to do, yeah, I don't think there really needs to be. And again, the pharmacist can identify the issue and hopefully faster if there is an issue, and then get them to their primary care physician. And that's the whole idea.
There is anybody here from the pharmacy board today, is there? Close the public hearing on House Bill 2714, and we'll be back with it one of these days. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 2102, and will you describe the bill for us, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2102 adds licensing exceptions for sports trainers accompanying a sports team, clarifies exceptions for elementary and secondary school teachers, coaches, and volunteers. It allows the Oregon Health Licensing Agency to issue registration to an applicant who meets certain specified criteria.
We have Holly Mercer and Randy Harnish with us.
Chair, again, Holly. Chair Greenleck, Vice Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chair Thompson, members of the committee, my name is Holly Mercer. I'm the interim executive director for the Health Licensing Agency. To my left is Randy Harnish, who is the policy analyst for the Board of Athletic Trainers and actually has worked with the board a lot longer than I have. So if there's any detailed questions that you have, I think Randy will be here to answer them for you. This bill is actually, it's interesting that you considered the physical therapy bill on the same day, because athletic trainers also had the same challenge as we have athletic teams that come into this state that come in for a brief period of time. They need to be able to take care of their athletic teams, and this actually exempts them out of our law. They do not need to register if they're here for that brief period of time. I think the Olympic Trail Games in Eugene prompted probably both pieces of this legislation. So the other piece of this legislation is that currently secondary and elementary school teachers are exempted from registering with us. This clarifies it so that if those same teachers are working in a private capacity on a weekend, for example, for a sports team, and they're functioning as an athletic trainer, we would require them to register with us. The other piece of this legislation is to make clear and consistent some reciprocity language so that athletic trainers from other states can come in and easily be registered with our state. And the final piece is just a clarity around changing the name to the Board of Certification, which is the National Board for Certification for Athletic Trainers. We have 288 athletic trainers in this state, about 5 complaints a year that we investigate, so they're a very compliant group overall, and we would ask for your support for House Bill 2102. Thank you.
There is a current board, is that right, and it's in OTLA?
Chair Greenleck and members of the committee, that's correct. This is a board that's been with us for a while, and we continue to actually appreciate their services. They are instrumental in particularly return to play after concussions, for example, and go through extensive training, so we value their services.
This is a recommendation of the board.
Chair Greenleck, that is correct. The board fully supports this.
Randy?
Chair Greenleck, members of the committee, Randy Harnish with the Oregon Health Licensing Agency. And I think Director Mercer has laid out the main point that the bill was designed to accomplish. And as has already been said, this was created at the direction or at the recommendation of our board. So, we'd ask you for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Wyden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things, it seems like we had a bill like this before dealing with therapists or something like that for traveling sports teams, or I know I've heard this before. I'm just wondering, are there any other groups that we're missing here that we should be looking
today,
at?
Physical therapy.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Chair Greenlick and Representative Widener, members of the committee. That's exactly correct. In fact, when we were talking in our executive director group of the health licensing agencies, the physical therapy director said that they had also introduced a bill based on the same kind of concern that we did not want to require registration, licensure, certification for these traveling teams that are coming in. So.
Nobody's registered in opposition to the bill. Have you heard any opposition to the bill?
Chair Greenlick, we have not heard of any opposition of this bill.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2102.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2102 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 2102 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there? Okay. Let's call the roll, please.
Representative Klim?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Kenny
Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion carries. Did Representative Hoyle have the PT bill?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, let's offer her the chance to carry this one, too, if she'd like, and if not, I'll carry it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I kind of feel bad leaving one bill off. I mean, we could just finish this whole lot today.
No, we already left one bill off.
Well, we left one off, but we can, yeah. The one we heard, just finish that up, too.
Well,
put them all on the floor.
You don't want to have all the work done. You want to leave some left over.
I'm okay with shutting the committee down early. It doesn't bother me.
Close the work session on House Bill 2102. Note that in the time of 1 hour and 20 minutes, we passed eight bills today.
Yeah. Could be nine.
Could be ten, but it's going to be eight. We're adjourned.
Time for me to go to that.